It's time for the Haddit.com radio show. Haddit.com radio is an in-depth look at all things VA. If you need help with the VA, log on to Haddit.com. Now, here's your host, Gerald Cook. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jay Basser to another edition of the Haddit.com blog talk radio show. Today is the 28th day of April, the last show in April this year. And we have our guest speaker today. It's Mr. John Rossi of the Blue Water Navy. John is the founder of the BlueWaterNavy.org website, and he does a good job trying to get these guys benefits. And Gerald Cook's also in here. How you doing today, Gerald? Well, I guess a little technical difficulty there with Gerald, but John, how you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing okay, John. This is it's a little rainy out here in Denver, but we can live through that.
Yeah. I was talking to a friend of mine who works at Champ VA, and he lives up like 14,000 feet or something like that, and he said he had 4 feet of snow the other day.
Yeah, it just keeps coming up there, which is good because that will give the rest of the place water, so that's all right there.
It melts off. But how's Blue Water Navy going, you guys? I mean, I know you guys are pretty busy with stuff going on in D.C., and I know there was a bill out with several sponsors on it, and I don't know the exact, of course, this with this political structure and this campaign stuff going on, I'm pretty sure Washington's pretty much right now in a kind of a standstill. I guess there's a few things getting done. How's that been working out?
Well, it's rolling slowly. I guess that's a good thing to say about it. We're collecting a lot of co-sponsorship, and we're getting a lot of interest and getting more press than usual here. But I'm just watching things go a little slower than I'd like them to. I think we've got almost 73% of the House of Representatives are signed on as co-sponsors. That's like 320 members of the House have signed on, so if it ever comes to a vote there, it'll pass the House.
Yeah.
On the other side, on the Senate side, it's which is S-681. The House bill number is 969.
There we are.
Yeah.
And on the Senate side, we've got 40. That have signed on as co-sponsors. We've got.
Were there 100 senators? How many senators we got?
Yeah, there's 100 senators, so we need 51.
51.
So we've got 40 that are signed, and we've got about a dozen who have said, "Gee, if we're not going to sign on, but if it comes up, we're certainly not going to vote against it." So we may have that one set also.
Do you have a list of them on your side who did what so the people can look at it and see if they need to help out a little bit and do a little push?
Well, all the what we use is the Library of Congress website to track that. And because the list keeps getting added to and whatever, that's probably the easiest way to go. It's Library of Congress you can get it broken out by state or by individual entity or whatever. It's a good place to know about anyway.
People go ahead and get a hold of the representatives and give you guys a push because, I mean, even though you might have, I think the Congress, you pretty much got it set. I mean, you've got a big majority there, you know, and to get a vote on it, but Senate, you know, I guess, you know, co-sponsors is not really, you know, indicative of actually people supporting it. You know, you could have 20 co-sponsors, but the whole Senate support it, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And basically, this is along party lines anyways. You're not going to have this is not a party issue, you know. I think everybody ought to be, you know, just equally supportive of that bill.
It's pretty much cut right down the middle. Not exactly so, but we've got almost as many Democrats as there are Republicans supporting this, so it's definitely bipartisan. We've never had any problem with the split on things. And this is the third congressional session that we've been doing this, so I'm hoping it's going to be the, I won't have to do it a fourth time.
Well, you realize too. I mean, this thing's you should have been cut and dry years ago. I mean, anybody on a ship off the coast of Vietnam, especially some of these inland bays and waterways, you know, Agent Orange washed out in the rivers into the bays anyways. Everybody drank the water, regardless, unless you're on a carrier at a Yankee Station or something like that. You know, that's a different issue. But a lot of guys were closer than they thought. You know.
Well, those Yankee Station missions, if you track them through the days that they were on station, is essentially what they call it. But they needed to head into the wind, and we have the deck logs of the carriers, and we can see them heading towards shore. You know, just by the plotting day by day, they typically got definitely within 30 miles. Most of them within 20 or less, right up into the territorial seas in a lot of instances. So the carriers didn't sit idly out on Yankee Station. Those missions took them all over the place.
Well, if they had long planes, they had to go into the wind, so they had to go what direction wind was going. You know,
that's right.
It didn't matter where it was at. They're at the mercy of the wind, so.
John, what's the range they was allowing you guys?
Range in terms of what, Gerald?
Miles offshore.
Well, that's set by whatever task you were doing. If the ship was on a gunfire mission, for instance, that's the range from shore is set by the caliber of the gun that they've got. In terms of the aircraft carriers, they would, like John was saying, they would just have to go where the wind took them because they'd head into the wind for lift when they would be sending out their jets. And I believe it's the opposite coming in, but I'm not an aviator here, so I don't know. But I have worked with a lot of the deck logs and have seen that some of those carriers were definitely within 10 miles ashore at some point or other, and then they'd swing back out towards what people see as what was called Yankee Station.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And so the guy with
a 22 in a rowboat, he could be pretty close to shore. They're going to have to count him, won't they?
I missed the first part of that.
A guy with a 22 sitting there in a rowboat, they'd have to pay him if he was able to shoot the ground.
If somebody was in a rowboat, they'd, I don't know what they'd be doing out there, but you bet. Yeah, well, the 5-inch guns were ranged at about 10 miles, 10 to 12. That's most of the destroyers. The cruisers had 8-inch guns. That's 5-inch guns on the destroyers, 8-inch guns on the cruisers. They had a range of maybe 16 miles, as I recall. And then, of course, for a while there, the battleship New Jersey was over there, and with the 20 or 16-inch guns, they were firing 26 miles from shore. Well, from target, you know, so target's going to be inland somewhat, or at very.
They were locking both legs at
them. Yeah.
Well, I imagine that'd get as close to shore as it would be safely possible, wouldn't it, to fire, so they'd get more range?
Well, that's exactly right. And of course, that's how the inland water ship list began, because we were discovering that in order to get close to the target, the destroyers would go up a river or canal or whatever it could take them to get closer to that target. So in that case, they would penetrate the geographical boundary of the country, and at that point they'd be considered to be in country, or as the Navy call it, on brown water.
Mm-hmm.
But, you got to realize too that Vietnam, we really didn't have shore bombardment as per se like we did in Korea or World War II. You know, they would soften up the beaches for landings. That type of fire was basically probably concentrated, and they were looking for specific targets. So some of those targets could be 20 miles inland, so they have to get close enough to the shore to pound that target.
Yeah, exactly. So, you bet.
Yeah. So if you could actually find some targets that they exploded 20 miles inland with a battleship, you can look at the ship's range, and you can just about put that ship at a pinpoint where it's located at as far as the distance to the shore.
That's correct, depending on which type of shell they're firing. Now, some of the shells had a little extra propulsion on it, and some of them not. So you could really pinpoint them once you knew how far inland the target was, you bet.
Yeah, so that would tell you the distance. I mean, it could be anywhere from 5 to 12 miles. I mean, it's not, you know, if they're shooting something way inshore, but... You know, they were exposed. Now, didn't they get a directive to actually define the inland waterway and define the blue water this last time around?
You're probably talking about the Gray ruling. It was in the Court of Appeals for Veteran Claims. The court essentially said, hey, VA, you are using arbitrary and capricious guidelines to define exactly what's blue water, what's brown water, what's inland, what's not inland, and they directed the VA to rewrite their rules. What happened, and that was back in April of 2015, what happened in response to that, this February the 5th, I believe, of this year, the VA entered their rewritten rules into the M21 manual, and they essentially paid zero attention to the court. They doubled down on the definitions that they've been using for the last umpteen years. It's been 15 years since they changed the definition.
That don't surprise me at all, John.
That's horrible. Really, that's horrible. And some of these law firms didn't call them on that?
Oh, definitely. There are. Matter of fact, we've got a suit in the federal court on that. I know that John Wells' firm, in addition to filing with us, filed his own suits against the VA. Matt Hill at Hill and Fonten also did. The big problem with what occurred here on the 5th of February was that the VA is essentially in contempt of their own court, because the court also asked them to take into consideration the outflow of the rivers, because the VA have admitted that there was Agent Orange on the water in the rivers. But under these new rules, everything flows right up to the edge of the coastline and then stops. They say, there was spray drift, but the spray drift never left the land boundary, so you draw a line right down the shoreline, and the VA says everything stopped right at that line. That's a pretty interesting trick. But that's the reason that all the lawsuits are flying now, because not only is it not common sense, but it's not scientific fact. And they won't be able to hold that one for long, as long as these lawsuits won't get shot down in the early stages.
That distance is probably a rectal distance. They probably reached out their backside and pulled it out.
Rectal distance.
I'd like to be part of that.
Well,
I'd like to get him a court myself.
I bet none of them would drink the water from that area.
Yeah.
I mean, none of them at the VA.
Yeah.
But that's probably right. But there are those in the VA that we've talked with who very seriously have drunk that Kool-Aid, and they honestly believe that none of the spray drift even could have gotten offshore, even though they're, you know, without any magic barrier, and actually believe that the dioxin Agent Orange mixture that was diluted 50-50 with fuel oil when it was sprayed, so it would stick to the leaves, it makes it float really good. They honestly believe that by the time it got to the end of the river, it had washed off of any oil surface or attachments, and immediately sank to the bottom, which is also nonsensical and non-scientific. So, in either case, there are those that believe both ways.
Yeah, well, Agent Orange was an oily substance, wasn't it?
Per se, I don't think it was really oily. It was a clear, pretty clear liquid, and it was a mixture of two of those. It was 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T that were mixed together, and that was still pretty much of a watery, clear substance. The only reason they did put anything else in it, which was fuel oil, was that they knew that the fuel oil would help it cling to the leaves of the foliage that it was clinging to.
Yeah.
It stick to it, so it'll start killing the trees out.
Well, it did a pretty good job of that. I don't know that they got their money's worth for 21 million gallons of the various colors that they had, but it served its purpose. But now the world is paying its price for that, because it's essentially added to the global burden of dioxin everywhere.
I was looking the other day at some furniture, and I was looking at it, and then looking at the manufacturing origin of the furniture, and this furniture is now made in Vietnam.
Yeah, there's a lot of product that is. We're up on our trade with
wood.
Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you buy any, John?
No, sir, I sure didn't. I wouldn't. No. I don't have any desire to actually purchase something made in Vietnam, so furniture will be the least of my worries. You know, it'd have to be North Carolina for me.
Well, that's good. That's good hardwood, anyway.
Yeah,
that's true. So, but you can see where stuff's made nationwide. You know, stuff, especially these places like these little warehouse and box stores sell his furniture. Look at it; most of it comes from Vietnam. So, you know, it's. I guess they're sending Agent Orange back to us.
back to Vietnam. Yeah, they. They're actually using the new name of Roundup, and they're putting in that Roundup Ready seed for various grains, and that essentially lets it be sprayed with the Roundup, which is essentially a calmed down version of the Agent Orange. Commercialized, I guess. But this back this blue water stuff. We have some grand plans here in the near future. On the 18th of May, there will be some events in Washington D.C. We are gathering for a rally that will be in support of the two legislations that are in the House and in the Senate. And in addition to that, on the afternoon of the 18th, Representative Chris Gibson is having a press conference and has essentially invited all the other representatives and senators that support the bill to come join him at the press conference. The people who have gathered for that rally will be there at the press conference as kind of the backdrop, and that should be a fairly big event. The purpose of it is to convince the House and the Senate that this is an important piece of legislation, and to get the darn thing out of committee and bring it to the floor for a vote. And as you probably know, that's what hasn't happened in the last two sessions, is that it's never been able to leave the committee in order to get voted on.
Do you think that's going to happen this time, John?
Well, I'm certainly hoping that it does, Gerald. There's no reason it shouldn't. The only reason it's in the committee at all is because the chairman of those committee have some reason why they're not releasing it. I mean, that's always been the case. But this particular session, we have Representative Jeff Miller on the House side from Florida, is chairman of the House Veterans Committee, Veteran Affairs Committee. And then on the Senate side, Senator Johnny Isaacson is chairman of the Senate Veteran Affairs Committee. I don't know what is holding them back from letting that legislation loose, but it looks like it's going to follow that same course again, and that's when we said, well, we need to make some noise about this. So in addition to us, those of us who can get to Washington, D.C. for the rally, we're asking that any veteran who is in support of this simply make a sign that says, you know, pass these bills, pass this legislation for the Blue Water Navy, and just walk around in front of their local VA facility and call their newspaper to come take a picture of them. And the more that can happen on the local level, the more people are going to hear about that, and hopefully they'll get additional calls into the various representatives and senators, and that's about the only way you can get grassroots to influence the legislative process.
Well, it sounds like a good plan. If you can get the proper news media there, like Fox or CNN or both of them, or I'm sure someone's contacted them to try to get a reporter over there.
They have been contacted, both for the coverage in Washington, D.C., and then especially on the local level, we have groups in a lot of locations that we're putting them together by from our database by zip code. And hopefully they'll, you know, be able to trump up a little public awareness and support, and get the phones ringing back there at the central offices for the committees.
You can offer free sandwiches and what have you.
Well, we can advertise that. I'm not sure how we can deliver that.
I wouldn't worry about delivering it. You know how they pull this stuff. Say, well, we had them, but we got mugged and someone stole the sandwich truck.
Yeah, they do an online petition. If you get some signatures on it, to get enough to get a couple hundred thousand signatures on it, then that'll get it out of committee.
Well, we do have a petition online, and that's been going along, I guess, relatively well. We're closing in on 80,000 signatures now. There's a link to that particular petition. It's on the Facebook page. I can't right off the top of my head tell you where it is on the website, but I will move that up front to the front page, and you'll be able to get on to the petition. If we can get that, you know, well past 100,000 by May 18th, I think that's another indication to Congress and the Senate that that there is some support out here for this. One of the other projects that we did, taking a snapshot at the grassroots level, for the various, since the beginning of this, which was 7 years ago, but we've been asking just randomly various entities of government to pass resolutions that support the Blue Water Navy legislation. We currently have, I think we've got 16 states that have passed those resolutions, and there are, I'll shoot from the hip here, but I don't have that right in front of me. I think there's about five cities and eight or nine counties and two tribal nations that have passed those resolutions. And everyone that we've presented it to has passed it. And all that was for was to get this snapshot of grassroots America. Are they for it? Are they against it? And overwhelmingly, they're supportive. So we've been pushing that message forward to the various committees also.
Well, it sounds like you're getting something put together here.
Well, we seem to have packaged it up pretty well. The reason that it's not getting out of committee is just a big question mark on the top of my head. It's almost as if, for the last 6 years, someone else was saying, no, guys, we don't want this one to pass. Well, now if the administrations change, especially early on with the prior 8 years ago, we've got something that's controlling the actions of Congress that's stepping back a little bit from what the White House might be. So if all you conspiracy theorists out there, you can jump on that one as you will.
Well, Dave, you've had this so close so many times and just getting it on the floor where you can vote on it, you're not able to get it.
That's right. We're not able to get it there. From the very first time it was introduced, we have had the majority of the Congress in support signed on. That would be 218 or more supporters. So, but this time we've got 320, and that's, as I was saying before, that's about 73% or just a little bit more than that. We're not stopping at that. We're continuing to educate the staff to get some more of the both House and the Senate.
Yeah, but it's easy to support a bill if you know that they're not ever going to vote on it. And I'd question who's the chairman of that committee? Don't they have something to do with that, or do they vote on it when they have their committee hearings or whatever?
It's actually totally the choice of the chairman to release it or not release it, regardless of how the committee votes, as I understand it. What would happen would be that they would have an official committee hearing for a markup of the bill, is what they call it. And then from there, after the markup, it goes to the floor for a vote. But it's always the chairman that will control whether that markup takes place. So we have Congressman Jeff Miller from Florida in the House, and we have Johnny Isaacson, I believe that's Georgia, a senator in the on the Senate side of the committee. And what's holding them back, I don't know.
Who's that guy from Ohio?
Ohio.
Yeah. He's on the committee, Senate side. Republican.
Well, I'd have to.
I've met him.
West.
I've met him. He's a pretty good guy.
Well, give him a phone call and remind him of that. He may have signed on already. I'd have to break the list out. And we were talked about that, you know, just a minute ago. The list is available if you go online, and even congress.gov, you can go to there and put the number of the bill in. It would be either S681 or HR969, and you will be able to read the text of the bill, which isn't very interesting because it's just add on to what's currently on the books. And it's a place you can find out exactly who's signed on, look at the history of the bill, things like that. And while you're there, you can look at other bills that you support. And there are some good ones there. There's the Research Act for Toxic Substance that is for the armed forces, individuals who are disabled by some kind of toxic substance.
Yeah, some type of chemical toxic substance. Your big ones are Agent Orange. You've got asbestos. There's radiation. Then you've got other chemicals too that are just as deadly. I mean, even the Korean veterans, they put so much crap in their uniforms it started making them sick.
Like DDT was flying around there, but now we want to keep our eyes on these younger guys too, and their key problem, or one of their key problems, has been the burn pits, and of course that's a destroying respiratory systems.
Causing cancer too.
Well, it is. There's the depleted uranium. In all the cases here, we're talking about the U.S. servicemen, which is really our focus. But as in Vietnam, all these other places, we've kind of destroyed the health of the indigenous population. And that's something that somebody will have to pay for at some point in time. But I won't go into that swampy area.
You get a lot of birth certificates. You get a lot of birth defects out of that stuff. You got spina bifida and rapid and all kind of wild stuff going on.
Right. Now, if you've been watching the IOM, the last report suggested that they could remove spina bifida from the Agent Orange list of benefits that were available to the male veteran, and what that's based on, I have to say I didn't read that section deeply enough. But
another record comments. Reach.
Another one, possibly.
Anytime there's an issue like Project 112 Shad, Blue Water Navy, anytime the VA can just come out with these ideas and implement their own, just like they're changing all the regulations and laws where you have to use certain forms to do your claims stuff, now have to use their forms. You can't get an outside opinion now from a SLAC doctor. You have to use somebody from the VA. All this is done in regard against a veteran, and they will hold on. It's a death grip. They're holding on to this benefit. It's a death grip, and they will not pass that benefit to the veteran until somebody pries it from their hands. That's going to have to take a very strong action either by Congress or the court. And the courts have proven they won't do it with Haas and the other stuff going on. So now it's Congress's turn to play ball.
Well,
and if you get enough people in favor of this, Congress and the Senate will have to come along because there's enough people that can say, okay, this guy was against it, let's get rid of him, you know. That's what happens in Colorado. You guys got recall statutes. You guys can fire people left and right if you want to, if you get enough people.
Well, yeah, and that's been historically applied also. I think at this point the VA is broken so badly and running under, I'll say, rogue leadership, certainly not in compliance with the tenets that set the department up, but that's happening to the point that it should be Congress that steps forward. Now, Congress has not been stepping forward to support any of the key veteran legislations, and actually across the board, they're pretty much dragging their feet on a lot of stuff. Don't know how to recall a whole house
she could recall them. But the main reason they're doing this, now things would be okay till some yahoo came out back in the 90s and said, okay, people, if you save money and save us money doing this and that, you get a bonus. So now there's free money involved, so everybody wants a bonus. That bonus has killed more veterans than you can imagine. More veterans claims are getting denied, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's something you're on to there, John. Within the VA there are some very good people, and especially on the health side, but over in comp and pen as individuals they're required to follow the rules that have been written at the headquarters level. I'm not sure I always see myself standing in protection of the VA, but I'd have to say that at an individual level, down at the workers level, they're working hard for the veteran in most cases, but they're limited by the rules, especially in the M21 manual, which is now where the cinches have been tightened about the Blue Water Navy.
Hands are tied.
Well, I know of one that was really a nice guy over in the claim section. I think I'd send a sympathy card to his family when they buried him. He was the last one I knew of.
Well, there are good people in the VA. They're not the ones that make the rules.
That one in San Francisco, Oakland. She wanted a service-connected veteran, and he had everything. All he needed to be service-connected, and she told the boss she wanted to service-connect him, and he fired her for not denying his claim.
Well, you know, that happens.
So, it's all going to change here before long.
Well, I'm going to hope that that's true.
There'll be a mass exodus from the regional office. There'll be a mass exodus.
Well, the trouble is, though, this bill, it runs out at the end of the year, don't it, John? Don't you guys have to start over if this sucker goes over until January?
That's correct. This is the last year of the two-year session, 114th Congress, I think. And if our legislation isn't brought out of committee, like it has not been for the, this will be the third session, it dies along with every other legislation that has never been got out of committee, and it needs to be introduced again. It needs to gather the co-sponsorship and the support all over again. At some point, you're kind of running on empty in terms of who's going to be introducing it, who's going to be championing it on the inside. In our case, Representative Chris Gibson is, this will be his last year in the Congress. And then the question would be, okay, so who do you have that's going to go through this thing again for another two-year cycle? And there's a lot of us getting pretty old and tired at this point. There's a lot of the vets dying off for sure, but you can only push so hard, I think, until you kind of come to the conclusion that no matter how hard you push, it's not going to work. Now, I would be real happy if someone were to just come right out and say, Blue Water Navy, we are never, ever going to pass this bill. And if that's really the case, then we won't be spinning our wheels and spending as much energy as we are. But that hasn't happened yet, so we keep at her.
I don't think I've ever seen a politician come out and tell you the truth.
No. Now, are there hotel rooms and stuff you should a veteran, a Blue Water Navy veteran or another veteran, don't have Blue Water, be Blue Water Navy, that would like to come to Washington, they live close enough, that they could come support y'all? Do you have motel or hotel room connections?
Well, actually, we don't. When the time to do that was near, we were unable to verify that we could get, 30 people there or 20, whatever you need to block to get a block of room. So we didn't do that. As long as anyone who's interested, and we'd like to invite all of the veterans and their families and their friends and relatives to come to Washington and join into this rally, which will be held right up on the street level above the Capitol South Metro stop, more or less. But if you if someone were to look close enough, you can get a room even in the outreaches around Washington, D.C., and as long as you're near a metro stop, you've got pretty much access to everything that's going on in the city, and you'll definitely have access to where we'll be holding the rally, right near the Cannon Building, which is just outside of that Capitol South Metro. I've seen some rooms less than $100. Most of them are running probably mid hundreds per night. A real a nice enough room is just at the $225 night level, and we're only going to be there for one day. So
is the old post office going to be finished by then? That'd be a good place to stay.
I don't know the post office.
That's the old post office that Trump's remaking into a motel, and it should be done pretty soon.
Yeah, well, maybe he'll give us a good deal. Who knows?
Well, he might. Tell him you want a veteran's discount. You stay in the Trump Towers.
Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it, I guess.
I'd invite him down to march with you.
Well, actually, I think he has gotten a couple emails, but we're in fact inviting all of the Senate and House members to come join our rally, as well as come to join Chris Gibson's press conference, which will be the afternoon of that rally.
Even one of these kids would be nice. I mean, they're pretty sharp children.
Well, anybody who can get there, we'll love them to death.
When's this going to be, in May?
This is the 18th of May, so it's the third Wednesday in May. Starts at 10 o'clock a.m. It'll go till 2 o'clock, which will be right after or all through Chris Gibson's press conference. We're hoping that we've end up with a lot of people showing up. We've got a few signs to carry around, but well, I want to emphasize this is a rally in support as opposed to a demonstration against anything. So we're keeping it on a very positive level. And
good.
Yeah. The main goal is to get the focus of the House and the Senate committees to get that bill released because of the pressure and information we can get out to the public on that.
And get those veteran backer groups involved. They'd love to have a ride out there and come to their rally.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
you mentioned the word rally.
I'd go without,
what time?
I'd go without the riot, but the rally.
No, not a rally. They don't rally. No, they love rallies. It's not a rally. It's a rally. They're honest people. Most of them are doctors and lawyers. Good people. They just have a good cause.
Yeah.
You know.
Just have a bag of beer out there.
I think it can have a lot of positive effect if it's done correctly. I think we've got this one planned out well enough that I think it will have a pretty good effect. Anybody near a metro, just hop on there and head to the Capitol South. You get off that, and we should be in sight somewhere.
Well,
and
I tell you what else people can do, John. I'll give you a heads up. Now, there's a lot of veterans like to, especially, you know, retired vets, they like to drag their RVs everywhere they go. And, you know, you can take an RV right there into D.C., but, you know, as a waypoint there, if you're going to do something like come to the rally, you could attend the rally. You can actually park your RV at Cherry Hill Park and take the subway in that way and not have to worry about the traffic stuff, see. You could do things like that on the outskirts.
That's right. That's up around the College Park area.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can catch a bus directly from the park, get to that first metro stop, and very easily get on into the city.
About 15-minute subway ride. It's an interesting stop. I've been on the thing several times. There's some interesting characters on the metro, too.
Well, it's a good system. It's something I'd like to see all over the place. Here in Denver, we're getting an RTD system above ground, but starting to make some good routes.
Just stay away from the airport. Stay away from the airport.
Yeah. Well, it actually does have a leg that'll be going out to the airport here pretty soon, and that's. That's much
underground
needed.
Already. There's stories about something what's under that airport.
Well, Denver's got a great, great stories and great history here, but
it's a mile high city.
Well, that it is.
Yeah. But no, I mean, you guys have got issues like, you know, like none other. I mean, for example, I'm a Navy sailor veteran, but I'm, you know, I mean, I wasn't in the Vietnam era. You know, of course, I've been on some ships that were in Vietnam, you know, years later. And even these ships are on the list, too, you know, that was actually, there were repair ships. One of them actually was docked real close in the Vietnam. And so. You know, just think of the history and stuff of what happens. You know, that stuff had an oily base to it. It did float in the water. If the oil floats on top of water, then Agent Orange floated. You know, and the ships actually pulled this water in, and some of them converted them over into drinking water and everything else. So,
well, I'm pretty sure they line the pipes and line the filtering process. It'd take quite a while for that to wear off or work its way out of the system unless it was very purposely flushed and cleaned.
Wouldn't it have to be steam cleaned, John?
Well, I think that's probably one of the ways to do it. We've had a lot of sailors get a hold of us that were reported on board after a cruise that the last Westpac of any certain ship, and they've come down with the symptoms of dioxin poisoning, and there's really no help for them.
Oh, man.
At least not in this legislative cycle. But we have to contend with the fact that we've got the territorial seas covered. Well, that's territorial seas as measured 20 or 12 miles from baseline. Baseline is not actually the shoreline. It sits out a bit from the shoreline, and as it wraps around the delta, it sits quite a bit out from the shoreline, and then it's 12 miles from that point. But even at that point, not all ships at all times were within the territorial seas, so we've been turning the deck logs over pretty thoroughly, and we're listing those ships as we find them. We're trying to stay proactive, so we're putting our effort into finding ships that were in the territorial seas, even though that's not been passed yet as a anything the VA's going to pay attention to.
Well, they're still putting ships to the list, aren't they?
For the actual inland waters, if there's a ship that's not on that, but it did penetrate the geographical boundary and ended up within the country on what they call brown water, that ship can still be added to the list. Now, when the VA did their last foul deed on the 5th of February, they not only tightened things down in terms of writing that up as everything stopped at the shoreline, but they removed a few of the places that they had previously been granting as inland water. One example is the inner harbor at Quinon, which is a harbor that you need to go through a little bottleneck to get to, and that was determined to be inland. All harbors are, don't know if it's all. I think all harbors are fed by rivers, so it's all washed in from inland. But Quinon was removed from the list. Vingang Rai was removed from the list. That's a bay that is down by Vung Tau. It clearly sits inward from any line that you can draw down the land boundaries, but they determined that they were going to take that off the list. So all the ships that are on those are on the list, being in those places, will remain on the list. Anyone who determines that they were on that ship during the time that it is currently listed in those locations will be given their presumption of exposure, but nothing new for those locations will be added. But any other location that was deemed to be inland will be added to it.
I believe, John, if you can get the news media there somehow, I don't know what it's going to take, but somebody needs to make a special effort to get the news media there. Of course, I don't know what kind of tale you can tell them. It's got to be something exciting, because they don't want just plain old news media.
Over the years,
there's gonna be a big barn fire down there in the middle of the street. You may mind, Joe.
Well, over the years, Gerald, we've put a lot of effort into getting major media involved in this, and had one person assisting us that was doing this job for many years, and she came back and said, I'm not sure what it is, but these people that I can work with on a daily basis just flat won't even respond to anything I send them regarding the Blue Water Navy. So what our walk-away conclusion on that is, here we've got another conspiracy theory that says, okay, it's not that it's not interesting news, but the word's out. Don't take this one on.
I think that's right. Yeah, I think you've come to a proper conclusion. Sad as it is, and as wrong as it is, because I don't know. Maybe it's people have not been in the service or something. What's wrong with them? Don't they understand the dangers? I mean, my God, we had all these poor guys come back from Vietnam made up with Agent Orange, and here you have the support personnel out there on ships drinking Agent Orange and washing their clothes in it and everything else, and they turn their back on them. That's not right.
Well, it's not right, Carol. But if you're a good conspiracy theorist, what you say to that one is, well, that was a problem 40-50 years ago. My problem today is somebody just told me to stay away from this news story. So,
yeah, I think you're right. And same thing with the legislation.
Well, you need to find the deck logs and also look for swim call.
Well,
a lot of ships
those
are parked at Propane.
A lot of beach parties that were held. We found most of those ships, we think. At least what we found is anyone who's come forward and says, I have a problem with Agent Orange and I was on a particular ship. We have dug it pretty well and have found that instance, and they're on the list. So there aren't there doesn't seem to be a lot in line to be added to the list at this point in time. So we may have gotten a good percentage of them.
And how many do you just speculate that you might have?
Well, there are about 460 ships on the list. I may have stuck my foot in my mouth. Could be 360 ships on the list. And our pretty thorough analysis is that we have helped about 85,000 crew members of that group of ships. Now, we don't know whether those crew members are still alive. We don't know whether those crew members have any Agent Orange related symptoms, but if they do, that seems to be the head count of what that group of ships that are on the list represents.
Well, that's quite a few.
That's quite a few. It's not that we've done nothing, it's just that we haven't ever quite finished this up yet, and that's what's driving me to keep at this until we finish it up.
Well, I'll say to everybody out there, if they'll contact their legislators or do a swamp emailing or notification to, didn't you say Wes was the chairman of the committee?
Miller in the House.
Miller, I'm sorry.
Isaacson in the Senate. The best message that can be sent is from the constituents of the
yes.
ones you're expecting to vote from. So, yeah, I would urge everyone to get back on their phones. As a matter of fact, give them a call and invite them to our rally and invite them to Representative Gibson's news conference, and that'll give them an incentive to pick up the phone and make a call.
Yeah, free hot dogs for everybody.
There it is.
I don't know. John, do you have any number or anything you want to give out or web page or anything that people can go look at?
Well, come to our website for the Blue Water Navy. It's actually bluewaternavy.org, and we've got postings on everything we've talked about here. The best thing to do is go to what is called the update log, which is the first blue button you're going to run into as you scroll down the home page. And that update log has everything that's been put onto the website in any location, all the way back to when we started her up back in 2007. And it's a pretty long list. But it's there, so yeah, come to the website and we can guide you from there. And
okay.
If there's anybody with questions about their ship or if you have some symptoms of that are on the Agent Orange list and your ship's not on that list, make sure you get a hold of me. And best place place is just jr@rossie.com. I would say the Navy at bluewaternavy.org. I've been having some problems with that particular email system, but so send them to me, and we'll get done whatever needs to get done.
Or they can give contact John or I. We'll be glad to get them headed in the right direction, that's for sure. And do you have anything we could post there at Hattet on this deal coming up here the 18th?
Sure, I'll send you what we've got on the rally and the stuff that's around it. We can send it and have you post it on Hattet. That'd be great.
Okay, great.
We'll put you on our Facebook page too, John.
All right.
Yeah, we have a deal there too. So, with that, we're out of time. John, I appreciate you coming on here and representing the Blue Water Navy. We're always happy to give them whatever support we can, because we know the battle you're in, and it's not an easy one, but you've really been super great at staying with those sailors out there that need help, and you ought to feel proud for the effort you put forward. It's not been unrecognized, I'll tell you that. And with that, this will be Gerald Cook and Jay Basser. We'll be signing off for now.
You've been listening to the Hattet.com Blog Talk Radio Show, sponsored by Hattet.com. All opinions expressed here are the opinions of the individuals appearing on the show and are not the opinions of Hattet.com or Blog Talk Radio. Tune in next time for another edition of Hattet.com Blog Talk Radio and the Ask Basser Show.
You guys have a good evening.
All right.
You too.
Thanks,
John.
We'll be talking soon, I hope.